If someone filed a lawsuit against you, would you consider sharing an attorney with that person so you could both save money? Sounds ludicrous, right? That's because it is. But it happens in real estate every day with agents instead of attorneys. I'm Jan Gibbons, and I'm joined by my trusty co-host,
Bob Gibbons.
Doesn't sound too trusty. And on today's episode of the Confessions of a Recovering Landlord podcast, we'll explain how to avoid the intermediary trap. In the intro, I mentioned sharing an attorney and how ludicrous that sounds, but are you telling me that people can share a real estate agent who represents both sides of a transaction, both buyer and seller, or landlord and tenant?
And the answer is yes and no. It's called intermediary, or in some places it's been called dual agency in the past. The Texas Real Estate Commission, TREC, defines an intermediary as a broker who negotiates a real estate transaction between two parties when a broker or a sales agent sponsored by that broker has obtained written consent from the parties to represent both the buyer and seller. Oh my gosh, that was too long.
Who's on first?
Exactly. So yes, legally, an agent can be in the middle working with both sides of a transaction, but no, the agent doesn't actually represent either side. And I disagree with Trek's statement that the intermediary broker represents both clients, because if a broker or agent has a tenant client who decides to lease a building which is listed by the same broker, who does that broker actually represent? The landlord or the tenant?
We are completely leaving out the fiduciary word.
Yeah.
This is just totally a trick question. So I'm going to say that the broker doesn't represent either party. There's no fiduciary to anybody.
I would agree, totally.
Everybody getting screwed.
That's exactly right. A broker or agent trying to work both sides of a deal doesn't really represent either side.
So why is that? Why is this even occurring?
Well, let's say the broker took the listing on an office building with a quoted rental rate of $32 a foot, but the landlord told her, the broker, the listing agent, that he'd be willing to take as little as $28. Well, now the broker's tenant client looks at the property and says, hey, I love this space, but I don't want to offer $32. Well, if the broker then tells that tenant, hey, the landlord told me they'll take $28, well, she's just hurt the landlord. But if the landlord says, hey, I'd be willing to pay up to $31 a foot.
No, if the tenant said.
Well, yeah, if he, the tenant, says,
you
I'd be willing.
You said landlord. You're
confused. Oh, did I say landlord?
Second. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
This is already so confusing. Don't mess with the audience more than necessary.
All right. Thank you for checking me. So if the tenant says he would be willing to pay up to $31 a foot, and he says, the broker says to the landlord that that tenant's willing to do that, well, now she's hurt the tenant.
You're hurting my head. Aren't brokers hired to provide advice and guide clients through the process of leasing or buying property? I mean, if they can't advise either side, it makes them sort of worthless. Yeah, all this just sounds like it's fraught with problems and situations where basically no one's needs are being met.
I think that's absolutely true. If you're in the middle, being the broker, you're in the middle, and you can't offer advice to either party without hurting the other, well, the broker is basically relegated to being a glorified paper pusher, just helping to facilitate the deal, but not really adding any value.
Okay, so can't a brokerage company assign different agents to truly represent both sides of the transaction?
Yeah, and that's called intermediary with assignments. So the broker is the intermediary, and they have agents working for them, for that person, for that broker. So the broker assigns one agent to the landlord or seller, and a different agent to the buyer or tenant. So each of those agents can now actually represent their respective client. Now, the broker has to remain neutral, however. So now...
I'm not getting this. There's pillow talk. You can't tell me that both of those agents don't go back to the office around the water cooler and say, I showed 1405 water down the street today, and guess what? They loved it. They'll pay anything to get it. Well, it's broadcast all over the office in two minutes.
And guess what? That both of those agents are supposed to be supervised by that broker. So now one of them comes to the broker for advice.
Mm-hmm.
And wait a minute, does the other come for advice? Mm-hmm. What is the broker saying to both sides?
Solomon says, cut the baby in half.
It is a big problem. And the problem I see with all of this is that the broker must remain neutral. And that, I think, is highly suspect. So a broker cannot in addition, let's just say you have an office where you have a broker with only one agent. Now, you can't have the broker on one side of the deal and that broker's agent on the other side of the deal, because now the person that broker is supposed to be supervising is on one side and the broker's on the other side.
Yeah.
And I've actually seen this happen. I've had people try to do that, and I'm like, no, that's illegal. And I've called them on it. And I was like, really? What if we called Texas Real Estate Commission? What do you think they'd say about this? Boy, all of a sudden... things change in a hurry.
Trek is a four-letter word to those who don't subscribe to the standard. Okay, so, like, is there any special documentation required to let clients know they're getting screwed?
Sounds like you've already formed an opinion on this issue. Yeah, of course there's documentation. Goodness gracious, there's always documentation. So the first and foremost most thing is that anytime a real estate agent or broker is working with anybody who's not licensed, or even if they are licensed, they need to have it in writing. So if they're representing the property, they need to have a listing agreement. If they're representing a tenant or a buyer, they need to have a representation agreement. So once they have to have that, the representation agreement, and so we're going to talk from the perspective of the tenant because that's who we represent. So we have to have the representation agreement, but also we have to have what's called the Information About Brokerage Services form, IABS. So the IABS is a form that every licensed agent or broker in the state of Texas is required to give to any unlicensed person with whom they discuss a real estate transaction. So whether I go have a phone call with somebody who is inquiring about a property, or they're inquiring about using me as an agent, tenant rep agent for them, I have to send them that IABS. Now, they don't have to sign that. There's no requirement for them to do anything with
it.
It's a disclosure. But the agent should be explaining what that document's all about, because that document's all about, hey, here's the way brokers can represent clients in the state of Texas. We can represent the landlord or tenant. I'm sorry, the landlord or seller. I put those sort of in the same category. They could be representing the tenant or buyer, which is where we play, or they can be the intermediary that we're talking about in this episode. So it's important that they actually talk through that. Now, what happens in the case of, all right, now we have a situation where you're going to have an intermediary situation. Well, now at that point, they have to have a written agreement.
More documents.
Well, and actually, in the representation agreement and in the listing agreement, there's a place for the agent to say whether or not an intermediary situation is going to be allowed at that point. Well, now that can change later. So whether it's allowed at that point or not in those listing agreements or the rep agreement, they still have to, at the time the intermediary situation comes up, have to have both parties sign a document saying that they then agree at that time to allow that intermediary status. So yeah, there's a lot of paperwork, and it's a pain.
So doesn't this have the potential to create huge major conflicts of interest? I mean, attorneys have ethics requirements to seek out potential conflicts of interest, not just for the individual attorney, but for the firm as a whole. Don't real estate brokers have similar ethics requirements?
You know, again, the answer is yes and no. Yes, there are ethical requirements, and they're not quite the same as for attorneys. The intermediary documentation requirements that I mentioned earlier are intended to make sure that clients know who represents them, if anyone. But they still allow a broker or a brokerage company to be an intermediary and have different agents working on things.
But isn't that okay, though, to have two different agents represent each side? They are, you know, commission-only agents, so they'll fight hard for each of their clients, right?
Well, that's the theory, and that's the idea. I mean, it's like, you know, in the large brokerage firms where they represent landlords, tenants, buyers, sellers, they have appraisal firms, they own buildings themselves. I mean, they do
the
all
Walmart
things.
The Walmart of commercial real estate.
Yeah. They have this thing where they talk about a Chinese wall. Why the Chinese? I don't know. I guess the Great Wall of China.
Like the Chinese virus.
And they say, well, the different sides never talk to each other.
That's just not realistic.
Well, I personally would say I don't think most brokers or agents go through the trouble of doing all the paperwork and even if they do the paperwork. When I was a landlord, I'll tell you one thing that I saw on the landlord side, when we outsourced our leasing to all the big companies, or we were taking proposals from them, some of them said, hey, guess what, Bob? We're going to put a tenant rep on your leasing team, because tenant reps know deals coming down the pike before anybody else does. So you'll get an advance notice or sort of preview of what's going on and who's out there in the market. Similarly, when we would go to sell one of our buildings, so our buildings are now going to be listed with one of those companies to sell, one of their investment sales brokers. Well, they have to have the rent roll. The rent roll is just a list of all the tenants and all the information about those tenants. Somehow those rent rolls would suddenly end up in the hands of the tenant rep department and the landlord leasing department and the property management department. Because guess what? If one of the big houses is selling your building, they want to sell it to somebody who's going to let them be the management mm-hmm. and leasing company after the fact.
They're going to say, I already know everything about it.
And they want to know that all of their tenant reps have that information so they can make sure that they go call on all those tenants as well. So there are so many potential conflicts of interest. And what's interesting is that if you go look at the annual reports, the publicly traded companies especially, that the big giant real estate companies that are publicly traded, in the notes of their annual reports, they specifically state and acknowledge that they have huge conflicts of interest all over the place.
But we're making money.
Yeah.
Okay, so while no one would trust an attorney who represents both sides of a lawsuit, you're saying no one should trust a broker or agent who attempts to do the same in a real estate transaction.
Exactly. Intermediary is just a fancy term for a really bad idea. I mean, that's the bottom line. I don't think most brokers and agents go through the trouble of doing all the paperwork, because it just would raise too many questions. And what I mean by that is that a lot of them don't actually explain the information about broker services form. They attach it to their marketing flyer mm-hmm. for the building, and they think that's good enough. They've checked the box, but they've never explained it to somebody. So most tenants or prospects don't really know what that means. And so most people just let it slide and hope nothing goes wrong.
Okay, so what happens if an unrepresented buyer wants to buy a broker's listing? What should the broker do?
Well, the broker can still negotiate the transaction, just not as an intermediary. So let's say she, being the broker, the listing broker, she gives that buyer the information about brokerage services and explains who she represents, meaning she represents the seller. She'll treat the buyer fairly, but she can't give the buyer any opinions or advice. She only represents that seller. That's perfectly legal. There's no requirement that the buyer be represented if they don't want a broker on their side. That's their choice. So
she's facilitating the buyer, but the fiduciary is with the person selling the building.
Yeah. I mean, if she wants.
And as long as that has been made clear to the consumer.
Totally fine.
Yeah.
And I mean, if I was ever in that situation, I would tell the buyer, hey, you might want to get your own agent. But they don't have to do that.
So I know we say this is legal, but has it ever actually been tested in a court?
Well, good question. I'm sure there's probably more court cases about this than I even realize. I know that in the state of California, there was a major, major case a couple of years ago about this. It was actually on a residential situation, but it was, you know, a person, an agent with a company listed it, and another agent with the same company sold it. And then I'm not going to go into any details, but
I think it was over square footage.
It was. They represented it to be a much larger building house than it mm-hmm. turned out to be. And like 2 years later, the buyer sued. And anyway, it got into the whole, you know, intermediary, fiduciary kind of issue. And so there's actually been in California a bill introduced to the California Assembly to basically outlaw the ability for a single brokerage company to represent both sides in a transaction. I don't think that's really gone anywhere yet, but at least the idea is out there.
So basically you're saying it's probably just a matter of time before this practice will, in fact, be eventually outlawed? Please.
Well, one would hope. I mean, with all the laws that get passed every year by legislative sessions around the country trying to protect the consumer, I'm amazed it hasn't already happened. I also hope that one day there'll be separate licenses for residential and commercial, although I doubt that'll ever happen in my lifetime.
Okay, are you ready? I'm going to lob you up a softball. Has Riata ever acted as an intermediary or dual agent?
I did do it once about 15 years ago, and I will never do it again. Nothing went wrong, and all the parties were happy and felt like they'd been treated fairly. But, man, I could see the dangers. And, you know, we just simply here at Riata don't believe in our clients being in a situation where they can't trust our advice. And I want them to always know that no matter what, we have their back. We're trying to represent them. So, you know, if we have a listing, let's say one of our clients wants to sell their building or sublease it, and somebody comes and wants us to sell it to them or lease it to them, and they're not sublease it to them, and they're not represented, I'll tell them, hey, go get your own broker if you want one. You don't have to, but it's probably in your best interest to do so. So, you know, if they decide not to be represented, that's their choice. But we still
you can't force them. But as long as you've really made it clear to them,
right. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's their choice. But we're only going to represent one
sure.
side because you can't serve two masters.
No, tried that before and it doesn't work either. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Confessions of a Recovering Landlord podcast. At Riata Commercial Realty, we exclusively serve companies that lease or purchase office and warehouse space. We never represent landlords. You can find us on the World Wide Web at TexasTenantRep.com, or you can give me a call, 972-677-0028.
We look forward to seeing you again next week on the next episode of the Confessions of a Recovering Landlord. Apparently, this one's been drinking.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're not recovering from drinking, just from being a landlord.
Bye-bye.